From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a high school auditorium where a senior was giving a speech to a packed house. The student, Soren Palumbo, stood in front of his peers and teachers to ask them why they thought it was okay to discriminate against those who cannot defend themselves. He asked them why they thought it was okay to use a word like retard. Palumbo's sister, Olivia, has an intellectual disability, and he wanted to share how hurtful the word was to her and to the people who love her. Palumbo's speech earned him a standing ovation and invitations to take it on the road. He shared his message in many places and with many people throughout the country, including at the Illinois State Senate. And in 2009, Palumbo's work blossomed into a grassroots campaign to end the R-word. Throughout the years, the campaign has led millions of people pledging to stop using that word. And Rochester's movement has become one of the largest in the country. This year's effort has a special focus to recognize and reduce the disparities faced by people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, especially in the fields of healthcare, employment, and more. We'll discuss those this hour with our guests. In studio, Ann Costello is director of the Golisano Foundation. Ann, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Also here is Dr. Tiffany Pulsino, who's assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Rochester Medical Center and medical director of the UR Medicine Complex Care Center. Dr. Pulsino, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Lindsay Jewett is area director for Best Buddies New York. Lindsay, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Dylan Moltaire is Best Buddies participant at Buffalo State College. Dylan, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Soren Palumbo is on the line with us, a senior director for global youth engagement for the Special Olympics and co-founder of the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign. Soren, welcome. How are you?
Hi, very good. Hello, everyone. Evan, thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Why don't you take me back a little bit here, because we tried to kind of set the scene, but tell me about Olivia and your experience that, you know, certainly as you're growing up and developing this relationship and seeing how Olivia is interacting with the world, you didn't know that you're going to end up in this nationally prominent position. So why don't you kind of take me back to some of what you were experiencing that led to this?
Sure, would love to. So my younger sister, Olivia, one of the younger sisters that I have, is now 23 years old, and for her whole life has been diagnosed with an intellectual disability. So she falls somewhere on the autism spectrum. And for me, as her brother, I had a front row seat to how the world treated her differently. You know, we would be sitting in a restaurant, and the table next to us would ask to be reseated when Olivia would sit down. We would be in grocery stores, and people would start walking down the aisle towards Olivia, see her, and walk the other way. And you know, that's something that as I grew older, I realized wasn't isolated to Olivia, but was an experience that was shared by many, many millions of people with intellectual disabilities and the many millions of people who love them fiercely, who have sibling relationships, who have family ties, have friendships with them. And what I saw was there are a lot of complex pieces of reducing the stigma faced by people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. There are healthcare disparities. There are school access challenges, all of these different pieces. One of them, however, is the way that we talk and the way that we reference people with intellectual disabilities. And the word retard, the R word, very succinctly, powerfully crystallizes the discrimination and the stigma and the prejudices that we hold towards people with intellectual disabilities, and it communicates it and it perpetuates it. So I thought if there was one way that I, as an individual person, could help chip away at the stigma faced by people with intellectual disabilities, that's one that I could take on, that I could try to lead and inspire and motivate other people to recognize the pain that the word causes, with the hope that when they recognize the pain that the word causes, they choose to modify their behavior, they choose to start walking the pathway towards inclusion, even if in the beginning it means just modifying their vocabulary a little bit.
Yeah, Soren, I'm curious to know, because I think you're probably more in touch with, you know, sort of school age kids than I am these days. But I think back a few decades ago to when I was in grade school, when I was in high school. Certainly, the R word is used as a pejorative. The word gay was used as a pejorative. I'd like to believe those things are evolving and changing, though. Do you sense that there has been significant change, in particular, in the roughly 10 years since the launch of this campaign?
I think that there has been, and it's a testament to the incredible grassroots leadership that we've had all around the country, certainly Rochester included as a leader there. I think that what we've hit on is that within our movement isn't to scold or admonish or even to shame. It's to educate. And our role is to show people when you use this term, and not only when you use it towards someone with an intellectual disability, because that use is pretty intuitive, actually. I think most of us are very aware that if we use the R word to describe someone directly with intellectual disability, the pain and the hurt is going to be is there. We understand that connection. But what's sometimes less intuitive is that if we use the R word to just mean bad or sort of comically broken or wrong or undesirable, that has a connection to people with intellectual disabilities. What we're saying is something is as bad as someone with an intellectual disability. And being able to educate and cast a light on that very specifically, I think is what drives the change. Because when people learn it, I think deep down people don't want to hurt other people. When they become aware of a behavior of theirs that does hurt other people, they seek to change that behavior, to begin to end the hurt felt by others. And we certainly see that in schools around the country. And one of the things that I'm most proud of, that I'm most excited by, is that this is the beginning of a conversation towards inclusion in so many schools. And we've had Spread the Word to End the Word programming in over 5,000 schools in the United States. And what we see is it can be the first step towards having a club that brings together people, students with and without intellectual disabilities. They can have other ways to engage the entire school. They can play sports together. They can do drama together. They can do theater. They can do other student engagement activities, and then can sort of walk together down this journey towards inclusion.
All right, so a
place and spread the word, end the word.
All right, so let me ask some of our guests in studio about that. Ann Costello, director of the Golisano Foundation. You've got an event coming up here March 7th, Spread the Word to End the Word Day. Has the launch for 2018 coming up. Why don't you tell us what is coming up there?
Sure. There's several activities, Evan. We've been on this show for a number of years now, 8, I believe. And this year, I have to say, the R Word campaign has taken on a life of its own. What I've learned over the years with educational and awareness campaign is you really need to be persistent, that you need to keep at it. And I think this year is a testament to that. Last year alone, I think we had 20 schools participating. This year, we're up over 40. And multiple events. Lindsay and staff back at the office, Evelyn Gleason, have spearheaded the community engagement, everything from the Rochester Amherst to a press conference at Bishop Kearney with the Mayor Lovely Warren and Cheryl Denoffel, as well as the town supervisor of Irondequoit. So a number of activities that we can talk about throughout the day. But this is our best effort so far. And as I said, I can really tell that we're growing momentum here, and we're very pleased with the community joining us.
Dr. Pulsino, what do you see coming out of this kind of campaign? What kind of impact do you see?
Well, I think one of the opportunities that we have with this persistence, as Ann outlined, is that there, and much like Soren outlined, the persistent education of the community allows people who want to be helpful and supportive of their friends and colleagues and community members to join them in the access to health and wellness that they have, as well as employment. So I think this spillover of, we're not just talking about a word that we use in general speech, we're talking about how to welcome others into the community in a real and meaningful way.
Lindsay, how do you feel about it?
I think the biggest thing is the education piece. We work in over 30 schools in Western New York, and I think the biggest thing for us is to not, like Soren had said, not fault people for using it. It's just a lack of understanding. Even in my own life, I'm in my 30s, I have friends that still have used it in front of me, and it's just a lack of understanding, because I'll kind of stop and look at them and they'll be like, what? And I'm like, well, you have to understand what that means when you say something like that to people. So I think, you know, I've been on this kind of campaign for 2 years, and it's growing a life of itself. Everyone wants to be involved, which is great. I think that things have kind of turned in the world of inclusion, and they're turning towards, you know, we're righting the ship, I think. So I think that that's helped as well.
In our second half hour, we're going to hear a lot more of Dylan's story. But Dylan, can I just ask you, generally speaking, how you feel about the campaign to end the R word?
Well, I think it's a terrific campaign. Definitely brings my chapter together, and we do tabling for it over the course of 3 days up at Buff State. And I think it really gets to the college students. I know that it actually taught me. I didn't know that the R word was really derogatory until I learned about the campaign. But I'm glad I learned about it, and I'm hoping we can get this word, you know, out of the, you know, the moniker of the English language.
Yeah, common usage, absolutely. Well, I think Lindsay just touched on an important point here, and I want to turn back to Soren Palumbo, who helped co-found the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign. How to handle it when you hear it. This comes up just about every time we talk about ending the R word, and I think it's an ongoing conversation, and it's worth having every time here. And I think, you know, and I would say, Soren, everybody's got a little bit of a different reaction to it. Sometimes people don't say anything. Sometimes people are very blunt and direct. So, Soren, for you, if you hear somebody, you know, sort of in public, wherever the case may be, use the word retard, and they use it in a derogatory way, even if it's about a specific person or not, I think you make a good point, just using it to as sort of a euphemism for bad or something else, do you confront them directly, and how do you do that?
Yeah, so I think that you make a great point to say that everyone comes to it with their own experience, attitude, story, and I think that shines through. So for me, the answer is yes, because when I hear it, my sister Olivia's face comes to mind, and the conversation for me is you know, to approach the person and to do it from a place of a teaching moment. And a sharing moment. For me, I always love to be able to talk about my sister and everything that I've learned from her. So to share it and say, you know, when you use that word, what is it? How is it that you're describing something in a way that makes sense relative to my sister Olivia? When you're describing something that's bad or undesirable or helpless or hapless, why would you make a connection to her? What is it about Olivia? Because I know Olivia as an incredible teacher, a friend, a classmate, a peer, a leader in her own way, and I don't see her as tragically flawed or comically flawed even. So how is it that there's a connection between this word and this incredible human being who is my sister? And by the way, multiply that story by 200 million people around the world. So I think that for me, that's the opportunity. And one of the things that brings me back to it every single time is, again, I love being able to share about Olivia and now all of my friends, colleagues, role models, heroes who have intellectual and developmental disabilities.
I also want to ask you, Soren, about something that I have seen you do a number of times when you speak to audiences. In just about every instance that I've seen in the many video clips that there are out there and in the work that you've been doing over the years, you tend to kind of present a scenario to the audience. You talk about a situation in which someone in a store has made a remark about someone who's come into that store. And the store employees have said, you kind of ask the audience, well, what would you say if you heard store employees say, I hate it when black kids come in here? Or you say, is it okay to hate old people? Or to think that sexism is okay? And every time you ask these question audiences, every time I've seen you do it anyway, it makes the audience palpably uncomfortable, Soren. So I want you to tell us kind of why you take people through that and then how you kind of turn it back to this campaign.
It's a great question. I think one of the challenges, one of the core elements of the stigma faced by people with intellectual and developmental disabilities is that they are often ignored. In a lot of ways, don't think of them or haven't in the past thought of them as people worth having this conversation about. We know that the conversation around sexism is a valuable conversation to have because men and women are both valuable constituent groups within society. But we haven't had the conversation in a big way up until, you know, the last 20, 30, 40 years about people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, because often we've dehumanized them and hidden them away and kept them outside of the bounds of society's conversations. So for me, the exclusion of a group like this, a group of fellow human beings, it should make us uncomfortable. It should make us extremely uncomfortable, whether it's through racism or sexism or ableism. And to to plant that seed in people's minds to be, I should be as uncomfortable with the isolation, the social exclusion of people with intellectual disabilities as I would be about any other group of human beings that I know now is a path that I don't want to be on. So to draw the connections and the analogies, I think, is important in a movement like this, because for so much of human history, we haven't had the connections between people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and the rest of society in the places that we go, whether it's a store, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a school.
And am I right to observe that the audiences, when you present that scenario, there's certainly some discomfort that in the audience when you do that, isn't there?
There is. Yeah, because I think intrinsically all of us are uncomfortable with exclusion and isolation because we know the impact and the hurt that it causes. We know that at some very deep human level, we know that. What we haven't done as consistently and as powerfully that I would like to and that many of us in our movement would like to is draw that connection between the humans, the people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and say that those people are deserving of the same inclusion, again, whether it's in schools, commerce, the medical field, any of these, they're as deserving of that inclusion as any other group of people. Hmm.
Talking to Soren Palumbo, the co-founder of the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign, for a few more minutes, and we're having a conversation about common usage of terms and the hurt that can happen here. So the R word is the focus of this campaign, and we'll make sure you understand what also is happening in our own community as we go throughout this hour. I want to grab our first phone call, and it's Michelle in Rochester. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, Evan. I'm really appreciating this program so much. I think a lot about ableism in the context of the work that I do with people with physical disability. And I'm going to stretch our discussion a little bit with a word that has always struck me as having some similar ableist roots. It used flippantly, the word lame, which I call the L word. And, you know, whether or not this is on the radar at all when we're kind of reflecting on, you know, what words we're using when we're just displeased with something that are rooted in disparaging, you know, people with disabilities. I would just love to hear your guests' thoughts on, you know, does lame deserve some similar kind of reflection and maybe a little, not language policing, but just helping people be more thoughtful about what the implications are for society when we stigmatize physical disability the same way.
Yeah, Michelle, so before I'd like you to stay with this for a second here, Michelle, because number one, Merriam-Webster, you know, the definition for lame is having a body part and especially a limb so disabled as to impair freedom of movement or marked by stiffness and soreness. And then the modern definition, and this is now included in the dictionary, in Merriam-Webster, is lacking needful or desirable substance, and then a slang reference to not being in the know. So it has become so commonly used that the dictionary, the folks who kind of track this stuff, have decided to include that. But I think what I'm hearing from you, Michelle, is that we have a tendency to describe something that's undesirable, bad, or negative in some way, going back to physical disability or physical impairment. Is that right?
Physical or mental. You know, sort of people who are less able than the words used to describe them become synonymous with inferior in other contexts.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm going to start with Soren Palumbo on that. Go ahead, Soren.
Yeah, I love the question. I think that it speaks to a couple of things. One, that words and language, I like the term word police as something that we're avoiding. These are, at their core, they're a description of how human beings interact with each other. There's nothing necessarily sacrosanct about a given word. It's that this describes a relationship between human beings. And the words that we use gather meaning over time by reference to other things. So a word like lame or like retarded gather meaning by reference to people with disabilities, whether it's physical disabilities or intellectual disabilities. So they, over time, accrue this stigma, accrue this badness to them because they're in reference to a population that, because of this stigma, society thinks is less desirable. And it's not surprising then that the words used to describe people with disabilities become words to mean sort of generally bad, undesirable. And when we take a moment to reflect on that and ask ourselves, do we want to be part of perpetuating and continuing and sustaining that stigma, then we should continue using these words, because that's exactly what happens. This is how we teach stigma to the next generation. But if we want to be part of breaking that chain of stigma, then we should be cognizant of the effect that these words have to perpetuate it. Hmm. And I think that whether it's lame, whether it's retarded, whether it's others, that's the power that these words have, because they work by reference to entire populations.
Anne, what do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with the conversation and appreciate the caller's question. We know words either, as Soren said, either include or exclude. And certainly words like retarded stops social inclusion right in its tracks. I have to admit, I never thought of the word lame, but I will now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And let me turn also to Dr. Pulsino for some thoughts on that. What do you think?
Well, I appreciate Michelle's point, and it sounds like, Michelle, you serve the community in some way for people with physical disabilities. And I think that highlights for us, when you spend time with the community with physical and intellectual disabilities, you really get to understand that this is a part of our community that is rich in culture and rich in contribution. So you are struggling with ways, even through language, to make sure that the rest of your community understands what they can bring to the table. So I think that's a very important point to raise, that the healthcare community and those providing service are really good advocates in that way, even when it becomes related to language.
Michelle, any follow-up there?
I did want to just chime in. I really appreciate the way that it was framed, not as word policing, but rather just helping people more actively, consciously assent to use of words in certain ways. So when we raise awareness about the implications for people that we may not have considered before, like, you know, putting the word lame on the table is potentially reflecting that ableism. But it's not about like policing, you know, we've got to stop using that word, but just helping people buy into a shift in the global culture by conscious choice of the words that we're using. So I really appreciate, you know, the space to just explore this a little bit. Thank you.
Yeah, Michelle, thank you so much. And I will just add that in regards to sort of word policing, or one of the things that you hear sometimes when it comes to comedy is, well, are we just going to police all comics? Are they not allowed to find humor and things? And I think that's a cop-out for comedians who are not sort of clever enough to not have to resort to sexism, you know, misogyny, stereotyping, anti-disability language, racism. I think we can be funny without that. I think we can express ourselves in ways that don't perpetuate stereotype. And I think that phone call was a wonderful example of a way that is not policing or overly judging, but just a reminder to us of what happens when we normalize language that does potentially have an effect to cast aspersions on parts of our own community. So, Soren, we're going to lose your time in just a second. Some final thoughts from Soren Palumbo, who is the co-founder of the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign. Go ahead, Soren.
Yeah, and I think for me as a sibling, I want to say certainly thank you to the incredible work that's being done in Rochester with Anne's leadership and others. And a plug, our national and even global day of engagement activity is next Wednesday, March 7th. This will be our 10th annual day of engagement around the R word. So as you go into your communities and have opportunities to have these conversations around the impact of words and how we can all progress towards inclusion, I encourage you to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, and take a look at our website at r-word.org, where you yourself can take a pledge to push this movement towards inclusion and respect even further. So thanks so much for having me on.
r-word.org, Soren Palumbo, thanks for the time, and I know we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you all.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we broaden the discussion, because this year's campaign focuses not just on ending the word, but also the impact and of disparities faced by people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the fields of healthcare, employment, and more. We continue that discussion in just a moment right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Ward Stair and Kurt Long from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra join us in studio. We're previewing their upcoming season. The calendar is out. We'll talk about what's included, and we'll talk about representation when it comes to philharmonic programming, classical music, and more. There aren't very many women conducting or composing on the schedules of major orchestras. We'll take a look at the RPOs next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guests in studios, we talk about the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign, include Ann Costello, director of the Golisano Foundation. Dr. Tiffany Pulsino is assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Rochester Medical Center and medical director of the UR Medicine Complex Care Center. Lindsay Jewett, area director for Best Buddies New York. And Dylan Moltaire is a Best Buddies participant at Buffalo State College. Lindsay, before we go any further, why don't you remind people what Best Buddies is?
Yeah, so Best Buddies is an international movement very similar to Special Olympics. We go into schools ranging from kindergarten to college and pair up students in natural friendships. So we work with kids in kindergarten all the way through college. We work with adults. And basically, we want to make sure that every school is inclusive and that there's no child sitting by themselves in the lunchroom. There's no child that's not allowed to try out for an activity. We work with a lot of different types of schools. So we work with private schools, public schools. We've been in the area for about 2 years now, 2.5 years, and we've opened over 30 schools. So it just speaks to Rochester and what that looks like. We also work with advocacy skills, so teaching kids how to go out there and run things like Spread the Word and how to teach them to be positive leaders in their community. I think we see a lot of negative connotations of students and young people being active in their community. We try to teach them the positive side of that.
How often do you think people are using the R word in schools now?
Oh, every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day I get a call or a text message from one of my students saying, guess what I heard in the hallway today? Or, you know, so-and-so got made fun of today and she's really upset. And it's more prevalent than I think people understand. So.
Yeah, I think I keep going back to Michelle's phone call, which I thought was so thoughtful because it was, I think, seeking to elevate our understanding of the impact of words without, again, making us feel policed or overly judged. But we do need the knowledge of how the impact spreads when we commonize, you know, certain language. And I think, Lindsay, if you're, what you're telling me is true, I'm sure it is, this word is still used all the time. Once something embeds in culture, it's really hard to kind of sort of strip that out. And that it takes real intentional work.
Yeah, so that's one thing that we've noticed in the past year. So this school year, we started in kindergarten, in fifth grade. So we started in elementary school. So those are new programs for us. And there's no level of understanding yet of those words and being nasty and being kind of cruel about people that are different. You know, we walk into school, everyone's kind of treated the same. It's before those differences start to become really evident. Once we get into colleges and stuff, you know, it's harder to kind of break down those barriers because, like you're saying, they're already embedded. They're already something they've learned. They've already a behavior that they have. And because kids have for so long been segregated from other kids in schools, there isn't that personal connection to make them understand why that word is negative.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm thinking of my kindergartner now, and it's a great point. I would be very surprised if that word is in his vocabulary at all. I certainly have never heard it from him. Mm-hmm. But what's the conversation to have with a 5 or a 6-year-old about it?
I think just understanding and making it relational. We have a lot of kids that, when it comes to kindergarten, it's when they first start to pull kids out of classes. So now it's kindergarten. Now you're starting to put them in their classes that are 6 or 7 kids in their 8-1-1 classrooms or whatnot. And at the end of the day, those kids are just their friends. So if you say, well, that word actually is mean to someone like, you know, Johnny, that would make him feel sad, then you're relating it back to who it is. So I think just being really relative with kids is the easiest way because they only know what they know. They don't know the big world that's around them. They only know who's in their classroom or who's their friends or who lives in their neighborhood. So making it really relative, I think, is what's helpful.
How many people does Best Buddies serve here?
Probably over 1,500, I would say, between students, volunteers, families. We grew from very small, 2 colleges, one in Cornell, one in Buffalo State, now to schools all over. We go all the way down to Binghamton, all the way back out to Buffalo. So it's been a crazy ride.
Yeah, go ahead, Ann.
Yes, I was going to say Lindsay's a real rock star. The Golisano Foundation started funding them just 2 years ago, and I believe I asked her before the show what was the goal at the end of 3 years. 30 schools. They've already surpassed that, and there's a year and a half left to go on the grant. So they're going great guns.
Wow, that's great stuff.
She's a rock star.
Well, I want to hear Dylan's story. Dylan's a Best Buddies participant at Buffalo State College, and Dylan, have you, in your own life, ever felt bullied or treated unfairly?
Unfortunately, yes, I felt that way. And I think in grade school with the R word, it was like, you know, as kids, we felt like we couldn't swear. You know, we weren't allowed to because our parents policed it. So it was like, you know, unfortunately, a beginner's word. Unfortunately, I do hear the R word all the time, you know, where I live currently. from someone who's very stubborn, but, you know, I'm trying to put an end to it, you know, or sometimes I just ignore it because, you know, I know how this is. But, yeah, I've been bullied. I know how that feels.
And do you feel a better sense now with the Best Buddies program? Are you feeling, has that helped you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When I left high school, I didn't maintain a lot of communication because I just wanted to move on, and then I greatly regretted it. But I have created a family at Buff State, essentially through the Best Buddies program there.
That's wonderful. And so now I'm curious to know what you'd like to do after Buff State. What are your plans and what are your dreams?
Well, I'm an intern with the Best Buddies office with Lindsay, and I'm hoping to basically get a job out of that, maybe make it a career, you know, if not here in New York State, maybe somewhere else in the country.
Okay. Is it something that you want to do because of the impact it's had on you, or any particular reason you want to work with Best Buddies?
Well, because this org means so much to me. I don't know where I'd be without it, and, you know, I've met great people through it, and I would like to... You know, I would like to share that with the world, and I would like, you know, other people to be impacted in that way if possible.
Lindsay, that's pretty good stuff. That's a great endorsement.
He's a good kid. We'll keep him.
That's a great endorsement. I mean, just, you know, Dylan is just one of the Best Buddies participants, and I hope you never have to doubt that you are loved and that you're valued and that you've got all kinds of options in your own future. And I wanted to bring in Dr. Pulsino to kind of talk about, you know, when we talk about the possible impacts of people who feel either bullied, cast out, whether it is on mental health, physical health, opportunity, how do you see that impact sort of rippling out?
So I think when it comes to health disparities in particular, when you feel made other and maligned in a society or community, it limits your own ability to mobilize those skills that you may know about self-advocacy and access in a significant way. It also, I think, makes it difficult more challenging for the community to put themselves in those shoes and then figure out how to modify what they're trying to approach the world with for increased access. So if you're thinking about a health system, by making a group of people feel other, it reduces their ability to engage in discussions around what they need as a patient or someone who's accessing a health center. And then you can't design the health center for what they need. So that really has a significant impact on their access to preventive health care, to engagement in employment because they're not healthy, or to such a burden of those resources that they cannot do the other things that are important to them, like going to college and getting a job and being an intern.
Listeners, I'll open it up to you as well. If you want to share your thoughts or your stories on ending the R word, are you still hearing, whether it's students or just people in your own circles using that term? Do you think that's changing? Do you have thoughts to share on the subject? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Joel writes to us and says, I've heard it on campus at MCC on a regular basis. In the last week, I heard it from an attorney and a professor. So unfortunately, there's still sort of regular usage out there. And by the way, that's just one perspective. I'm not at all seeking to cast aspersions at any individual institutions. Joel's just saying he hears it. I think that supports what Lindsay's saying is, unfortunately, we're hearing it all the time. From adults, too. I mean, do you hear from adults?
What's interesting about the adults in schools is every school district is very different. Every mindset about disabilities and inclusion is very different. So I could go into a school district and they'll point blank tell me no. They don't want to do programs like Best Buddies or...
They'll tell you no?
Oh, yeah.
On what grounds?
That they don't need it. It's not needed in their school society. It's not needed in their school community.
That their kids don't use that word?
That they don't use the word, that they are inclusive, that they don't need it. So I get told no a lot, actually.
And what do you say at that point?
You know... The hardest thing about that is having to tell parents. A parent has reached out to us. They want the program in their district. I've done the work to go find the district people you need to speak to, and being told no is, and then I have to go back and tell that family. Well, your district doesn't believe in what we're doing, so I my hands are kind of tied. You know, again, it goes back to the education piece. We have a lot of amazing schools that are in our programs that are very well documented now. I can say this is how this changed the school society. You know, I always go back to the elementary programs because they've been so amazing in the first 6 months, but now it's part of like the school's community. Like everyone is involved in the mission. Everyone is involved in what we're doing. So then we don't have to worry about it in high school. We don't have to worry about it in college. The whole point of Best Buddies, and our founder says it every day, we want to put ourselves out of business. We shouldn't be in schools to make sure that everyone's friends are treated fairly. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I tell people what my job is and they kind of laugh. They're like, oh, you go and make kids friends? I'm like, yeah, because they're kids that aren't being made friends. And a lot of kids that we work with are not kids with disabilities. They're kids that feel ostracized for being part of the LGBTQ community or because they have, you know, something physical going on with them. There's so many different reasons why kids are ostracized these days that we are the one place where kids can come where there's no judgment regardless of anything. So I think that explaining that to schools is a little different, but that doesn't surprise me, that message.
See, Anne, you know, it sounds to me like the schools that Lindsay is describing, they want to view themselves as, you know, really sort of up to date on the importance of inclusion. But there's a little bit of denialism, I think I'm hearing there. So I want to ask you, if you encounter the term being used, first of all, among adults, how do you respond to it when you hear it?
Well, I know that my family and friends would say that I always take the opportunity to, as Soren said, to educate and to remind whoever is using it, the hurtful nature of that word. And if I need to, I'll remind them of my work and why, what I know now because of my work and also my personal beliefs on social inclusion. So I always bring it up. I always try to have the conversation as appropriately as I can. You know, back to this school,
yeah.
Special Olympics and Best Buddies and the Golisano Foundation, we have a vision of the world that's inclusive mm-hmm. and that people with IDD can live healthy, productive lives in their communities, just like you and me. And over the years, we've tried to promote inclusion and end isolation and discrimination through the programs that we fund, like a Best Buddies. This opportunity, this R Word campaign, and thanks to XXI, not only for every year helping us to promote it, but for the year-round media and educational campaign through Move to Include, this has given us a whole other platform, a whole other way to have this conversation with the community. It's one thing for a foundation like ours to fund a program. It's another to year-end, all year-round, to be able to communicate with the broader community on what the R Word means to people with intellectual disabilities. So thanks for that. And we're not done with the schools. I mean, it takes time. Like I said, this campaign has taken on a life of its own, and we've been at it for 8 years. Mm-hmm. Lindsay and Best Buddies has been in town for 2 years. And also there's other wonderful programs out there. Mm-hmm. Best Buddies certainly mm-hmm. isn't the only one, and there are many other programs in schools right now. So I think we should put that out there mm-hmm. that it doesn't mean schools aren't doing right. anything for inclusion.
In a moment, we'll get back to the list of what's coming up starting a week from now when they launch the 2018 version of the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign. But let me get another phone call. This is Chris in Rochester. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, hi. I'm going to pull over so you can hear me better. But
okay.
The reason I'm calling is I'm good with retiring the R word. But I guess I've been around for a long time, and I come from a time when the R word was the kinder word. Before that, I mean, the R word started to be used because the diagnostic terms were like moron and idiot. Those were official terms. They became pejorative. Now the R word is pejorative. And it's fine to retire it, but what I would really, it is about inclusion and being negative about a group that's not yourself, the othering that other people recommended or have been talking about. But what I urge is if people could just be a little bit kind to people that are still using that word, and not in an insulting negative way, but because they don't realize that that word is being retired now and there will be new words, but realizing that it really isn't about the word, it's about people and their attitudes towards other groups, and that whatever word becomes politically correct then becomes pejorative because people cannot accept people from other groups.
Yeah, Chris, thank you.
That's my point.
I appreciate that. Some thoughts on the medical perspective there.
Well, Chris, I think that's a really important clarification that, you know, medical terminology has evolved over many decades just as our medical treatments evolve. And to Chris's point, those were medical diagnoses in the 1920s and 30s, and that is where some of those words came from. I think as time evolves, and as you said, that the point of inclusion is to make people feel other, not feel other anymore. Language has to evolve, and language has impact. The most impressive thing I think about this campaign is that we are talking about this as a community. There are many words in our community and our language that make people feel other, but this campaign really highlights a word and an opportunity to have a discussion. So much like Lindsay highlighted, that Best Buddies helps kids with other conditions and not just intellectual and developmental disabilities. The point is to bring the conversation to the fore. So I think that was a really important point that Chris made, that language evolves just as humanity evolves and our community evolves. And this is an opportunity to have that conversation.
I heard in Chris's remarks a warning against policing and kind of calling someone on the carpet. And, you know, I don't think anybody is saying we should comb through every email and comment you've ever made online and in your public life. And if someone can prove you ever said something, that you should be, you know, brought before the court and, you know, purified publicly. I mean, there certainly has been occasionally a little bit of a purity test that happens in a lot of these circles of these conversations. So it's important for me as the host to say, I'm sure I've used that word that way in a terrible, pejorative way. I'm sure I have. Growing up, I heard it. I'm sure I used it. I'm sure I used a word like gay in a way that would embarrass me. I'm not going to do the holier than thou thing. I hear in Chris's comment just a way to kind of bring that conversation forward, let people know firmly, but also, I don't know, not to cut people out of their lives, to sort of to overly shame. What do you think, Ann?
No, I agree with you totally. It's we all come from our own personal backgrounds and experiences and belief systems, and I think today, especially today, the young people, it's, what do they call it, the inclusion generation, mm-hmm. and social inclusion has become the issue or the topic of the day. And I think if ever there was a time that we could be having these conversations, it's now. And I thank Soren. I wish I had thought of it 10 years ago, but it was a perfect fit for the Golisano Foundation. Our missions are so compatible with Special Olympics and Best Buddies that we can take this and run with it right here in our community.
All right, so there's some events coming up, and Lindsay Jewett, Area Director for Best Buddies New York. What do you want people to know about what is coming up starting a week from now?
So one of the things that we've worked on this year, as opposed to maybe last year, is making it more accessible for everybody. So we are doing a lot more in the community. We are doing things that are a little different than I think we've done in the past. So we're super excited about that. Things like happy hours to get more people that are in their 20s and 30s kind of engaged to what we're doing. So we have a couple of those coming up. One of them is going to be on March 14th at Swiftwater Brewery. So kind of a cool little fun spot to have people come. We've worked really closely with the Amherst since November. Chris Taylor is the head coach of the team, and his son is actually in our programs, so he's a very large advocate for our programs. And they've offered to have us at their 4 or 5 hockey games throughout the month to have people come up and learn about the pledge, learn about Special Olympics, learn about Best Buddies. And so we can really educate people in a different format. I think that sports and kind of social inclusion are kind of something that maybe don't necessarily align all the time. So we're excited about that. On the actual day, we'll be working with the mayor and the county exec at Bishop Kearney. We also have students speaking, which is just another great way that we can teach other students about advocacy and how to be in the forefront of that. So we have a lot of really fun stuff. Golisano put out an amazing list of all the events. We're working with other organizations. I think that's a huge part of what we do at Best Buddies, and I know it's similar for the Golisano Foundation. We'll be having a night at Gigi's Playhouse, which is a newer organization here in Rochester. We'll be having just kids come and spend time together and learn about the pledge. So like I said, there's lots of things going on that we've worked really hard on. We just want to make it accessible for people that may not have heard about it before or have seen it before. So going kind of out of our school boxes. Every school has an event. Every school has an activity that we work with. Some have basketball games. Some have, we have a wheelchair race. So people at Nazareth College, there's a help desk and it's up on a ramp. And we want to teach people how hard it is for individuals that are in wheelchairs to get up that ramp. So there's lots of things going on throughout the week.
Okay. And online where to learn more?
At thegolisanofoundation.org.
Golisano or the Golisano? I should know this, but I don't know if there's
Golisano.
A Golisano. Okay, yes. GolisanoFoundation.org. Yes. I'm in trouble with Ann. And also the national website is r-word.org. If you want to jump online, see the numbers of all the people, thousands and thousands who've taken the pledge over the years, and learn more about the national campaign there. Let me grab another phone call. This is Brenna in Rochester. Go ahead, Brenna.
Hi there. I just wanted to talk about the use of the word other. I think it's less about that and more about, you know, the intent to make people feel less than, right? Because we're, you know, not any of us can fit into every single group that's out there, but to make somebody feel less than, you know, subhuman, unworthy of love, unworthy of friendship, I think that's the crux of the issue. So whether we use a certain word or not, it's all in our attitudes, how we treat people, how we, infantilize, people with disabilities.
Well, thank you, Brenna. I appreciate that. I think it sounds very close to the mission, whether we're using the term other or less than. But I think Brenna's point is a good one for us to remember, not to make anyone feel less than or unloved or unworthy. So Brenna, I appreciate that phone call. And on that note, I got an email from a listener who just asked us about, I think the listener did use the term other or otherize people. We should talk about what that means to losing opportunities for equal health care, equal employment. And we've got a few minutes left, and I think that's a great point. So I want to turn back to Dr. Pulsino, who has a lot of different hats that Dr. Pulsino wears, but also the clinical director of the IDT Leadership Initiative at URMC. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that. When we make people feel less than, when we otherize, are we also, whether we know it or not, impacting their potential to get good quality health care, good quality employment opportunity?
Yeah, I think that's very true, and I think it's a good point to raise. I think if we just look to what the literature would tell us, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are more likely to live with complex health conditions. If they do have a chronic condition, it's more likely to impact their quality of life. So somebody with an intellectual disability with diabetes is more likely to have an impact on how they're able to go to work and do the things they want to do in the community from that condition than someone without. They really are more frequently missing cancer screenings. So the routine cancer screenings we would do for any adult are more frequently missed in those with IDD. They're more likely to be obese and have undetected poor vision and hearing. And all of those things will lead to, if you're not healthy and living in your community, they will lead to things like homelessness and food insecurity because you're not able to have gainful employment because you're not in good health. So I think one of the missions of the University of Rochester that we've been working hard on in the last 2 years is to develop some strategic initiatives to really address this. So how can a healthcare system in a large academic center really address these disparities and what are the root causes of them? So we have quite a force to be reckoned with in the Rochester community, and a lot of that force in an academic institution and medical center that can be brought to the fore. So the IDD Leadership Council is really trying to bring together research, clinical service, and workforce development and training around the healthcare system and our academic institution to really address these disparities in our own community.
Here's a story that I've told a couple of times on this program, but it's worth, I think, in my mind, going back to because of what the profound impact I saw in just weeks of summer camp when I was many years ago a camp counselor, and the YMCA camp where I was working would set aside what they would call a rotary week at the end of the summer. And then midway through my years as a counselor, there was a discussion, shouldn't we just sort of integrate and include? And so we started doing that. And the first day of the week, you would have children with various backgrounds and disabilities, sometimes a child with wheelchair access, children with Down syndrome, and the kids who were sort of typically abled they'd have to learn about their fellow cabin mates, and sometimes there would be picking on or making fun. We had a lot of stern conversations about that. 6 days later, they're going home, and it was like just a ring of strength with everyone standing up for everybody. You don't call this person that. You don't use this word. The R word was not allowed. These kids, 10, 11, 12, which is a hard age, were policing that themselves because they loved their friends who they were going to camp with because they probably hadn't had all that much interaction. And there they were. And I want to believe that kind of leadership can even happen in kids
if we integrate better, if we have those experiences more. What do you think?
I think that's very true. So one of my hats, as you mentioned, is being a mother of a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old boy. So a lot of kind of what I can watch them do is that exposure and that integration of support allows kids to really do what kids are really good at, and that's what Best Buddies highlights. They're very good at adapting to what is presented in front of them, as long as the environment is such that it supports them being adapting. And it doesn't create an environment where their leadership, their counselors, their teachers are making those students feel like they should be separate and apart. So kids are amazing at doing that given the right environment.
20 seconds, Lindsay, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think kids just want to feel like they're loved and they're part of their community. That's the best thing we can do for them.
Well, I love the work that you're doing. I appreciate that. Lindsay is Area Director for Best Buddies New York. Dylan Molterra, Best Buddies participant, and now at Buffalo State College. Good luck to you, and thank you for sharing your experiences, and we really appreciate having you this hour, Dylan.
Thank you for having me.
And you got it. Lindsay, thank you.
Thank you. Great having
you here. Ann Golisano, Director of the Golisano Foundation. Always good to have you, Ann. Thank you. Thanks, Evan. And our thanks to Dr. Polsino as well. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
It's GolisanoFoundation.org and r-word.org. The official launch is a week away, but it's something that we keep in mind every day, thanks to the work that they're doing to improve our community. Short break and more connections coming up.